Welcome to Teamwork, A Better Way, the podcast filled with stories, experiences, and insights from leading high-performing team experts. Here are your hosts, Spencer Horn and Christian Napier.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Teamwork, A Better Way. I'm Christian Napier. Joining me in the lovely striped shirt there, Spencer. Spencer Horn, how you doing?
Good. So good, Christian. Good to be with you. Seems like it's been a while. We missed last week, right?
Yeah, it's been a minute. Is it raining out where you're at?
It is raining, which is good because that would be suppressing some of the pollens that are causing mayhem with your sinuses, right?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. The allergies are just killing me today. But we're going to power through it because we have an amazing guest joining us from, 11 time zones ahead of us. Spencer, why don't you introduce our guest today?
I am so excited to introduce our guest to Fahad Ahmed, who is coming back. I guess he joined us, when was it, 2020? Or yeah. during the when we our inaugural season. So that was about 4 years ago. But Fahad and I have known each other for many years. I met him through a leadership cohort that he is participating in, and a full year program for leaders of PMI chapters. And he was chosen to come and participate in this. And he's just such an incredible individual. But I want to tell our listeners just a little bit about him. Currently, Fahad, unless this is not correct, but head of information technology at Jubilee General Insurance, but he does so much more. I mean, he coaches, he's a transformation expert. He is a PMI certified project management professional. That's what we call PMP. He has 18 years of experience leading all stages of system development efforts, including all the requirements, definition, design, architecture, testing, and support. You know, that's a lot when you're in the IT world, right, Christian?
Oh, yeah.
I consider him an outstanding leader, and, you know, the people that know him feel the same way. He's able to coordinate and direct all phases of project-based efforts and managing and motivating and leading project teams. He is somebody that absolutely believes in the power of getting teams engaged, and he's really adept at developing effective policies and procedures as well. Because, you know, sometimes those policies and procedures can shut down engagement and over manage and over control. But he's somebody that believes in accountability and you know, measuring all milestones and all the technical aspects of it as well. It's rare that you manage the technical side of a business and marry it with the people side. And that's something that Fahad has worked really hard to do. And he's working in the financial sector, right now in insurance. And he's somebody that is specializing in risk management, testing, software, quality assurance. He's got all those skills, domain understanding, people management, which I think is, of all those, the most important. So Fahad, let me bring you on the screen here. So glad to have you. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure after 4 years. And thank you so much for such a overwhelming introduction. I was thinking it is me or somebody else you're talking about, but
no, I know you're humble, but it is true. And today this is a topic that you are very passionate about. Our theme for today is how to create thriving teams through the power of psychological safety. So I'd like for you, Fahad, to help our listeners. I'm sure if you're listening to this, you've heard of the idea of psychological safety, and maybe you're aware of it, and that's great. And I'm so excited to hear Fahad's experience. But would you, for maybe people that aren't familiar with it, define what psychological safety is, and what does it mean for teams?
Okay, thank you so much. Psychological safety has always been around, but again, this term is recently coined and has really gained popularity over the years, that you as an individual, I as an individual, feel safe within a team to express my opinion, to share any kind of thoughts, any question that I want to ask, or even any concern that I want to share with respect to team. Now, it is very much important that the people who are very talented, the people who are exceptionally blessed, but the environment is not conducive for them to be expressive. Now, in such a way, psychological safety has become really important, because you know, if you have people who are supremely talented, but they are afraid to share themselves, they are afraid to express themselves, so they will never be productive. And you know, the trust factor in your team will always be at a certain level. I won't say low, but you know, people are not very comfortable sharing their opinions. You know, because in high performance teams or in high performance environments, we have individuals who are ultra talented, but they complement each other. So when they come together, and if I have some opinion or thoughts, which is or a feedback even that that I want to share with you, and I don't agree with something, but I am unable to say it, I am unable to express it, I am unable to raise my hand and say that the solution is not as effective as you're thinking, I have a better solution and I can volunteer for that. So this is called psychological safety. And the environment that is the safer environment is called psychological safe environment.
I'm having problems with my controllers right now, and so it got a little slow. So I agree, it's that ability to be able to have an environment where people can speak up. Could you describe what's the opposite of that? What prevents people? You know, you mentioned trust, but what happens to cause people to not raise their hand, not to express themselves, not to share their opinion? And what's the danger of that?
See, first thing is that the environment that they're working or I am working in has a certain history attached to it. It has a cultural aspect to it as well. For example, if you've read the book Outliers, so it narrates a story of Korean pilots. You know, there was a time when Korean airline crashes were at the top of the charts, and you know, the kind of one of the organization or airline got bankrupt due to that. But you know, the organization look into it thoroughly, understand what the root cause is, because in those cultures, you know, you cannot disagree with your seniors. So at that time, I never knew that means that relates to psychological safety, because if I or you or somebody else or even Napier wants to disagree with your boss and reluctant, because you know, we will face a repercussion, we will never say or utter a single word that can have a devastating impact. So the environments, you know, control, the too much controlling environment also gives an impression that you, how can somebody, even junior, senior, can question somebody who is an authority. So in high power distance culture, which has very hierarchy related matters, so it is very evident that you cannot openly disagree. But in the new cultural nomenclature of organizational behavior, it's called low power distance. You know, psychological safety has given too much importance, because everybody knew that if we don't provide that liberty to our workforce, we will never be able to achieve success, because success is always a collaborative effort or a collective effort. Unless people come together, you know, share their opinions, share their feedbacks, and also have disagreements. You know, in strategy and implementation strategy, there's a lot of time with where we have disagreements due to priorities, due to sensitivity, and somebody gets up and say, you know, whatever you've been discussing for an hour or 2 hours, I have a quick solution to it, and we will get rid of this like this. So if somebody who thinks that he can be heard, he can be seen and heard, that's very much important. So the opposite of not having a psychological safe environment is an environment where people can be listened to, where people can be heard, and also they're accepted as it is. Now, there's also a form where it is very difficult that you cannot blend in, because you have to blend in into the environment, because your uniqueness is not appreciated, or even your talents are not appreciated. You're seen as a stubborn person or somebody who is very difficult to comprehend or questions everything. since I read a lot, there's a book called Radical Candor by Kim Scott. So it is, Google is the prime example of the elite organization that promotes psychological safety a lot. So within Google, there are 100 teams. But again, in those teams, there are some successful teams and there are some not so successful teams. And they found that the only difference between the successful team versus or the high performance team versus low performance teams or not so high performing teams is psychological safety with their manager or their leader.
We got a comment here, Spencer, from a viewer.
Maria Sharif Ahmed says, Fahad, my genuine appreciation for such courageous speaking. I agree. You know, here you are speaking in a language that's not your native language, and I'm so grateful that you are willing to come on the show. You talked about that when there's not psychological safety, people aren't willing to disagree. And it seems that if someone's not willing to disagree, that a manager or a leader will have a more limited perspective on options available for just potential outcomes or strategies. But if you're listening to this as a leader and you think, well, if people disagree with me, that means there's lack of unity on the team. I'm sure you disagree. It's some of the best teams are able to function because they create an environment where it's not like you're challenging the leader. It's the leader actually asking for, why is this a bad idea? Somebody give me another perspective so that we don't make a mistake as a team. Because if we have an environment where we can actually discuss the pros and cons of decisions, we actually make better decisions. But if all the decisions are just mine as the leader, the chances of error and mistake and expensive, costly outcomes goes way up, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly. See, a different perspective is basically the inclusivity that requires for a high performance team. You know, you bring people together from different experience set, from different backgrounds, from different talent, having different talent set. So if they are not allowed to speak their heart out, if they're not allowed to share their personal opinion, or even some opinions based on their previous experiences, you will never be able to make good decisions or informed decisions as well. Now, what happens is when we have a leader or a manager who thinks he is or she is know-it-all kind of person, you know, that attitude shuts people up. So what, after a while, there will be few people who will keep trying, you know, sharing their perspective and, you know, trying to help the leader, you know, so that the organization, can avoid the loss or can avoid any kind of a challenge. But after a while, people either compromise or leave the organization because they think that it is useless to say because they're not heard and they're not understood. Now, it is very much important that you give the people liberty. And Spencer, I thank you very much for giving up the different perspective. Sometimes around, leader has to ask that question from the team that why it is a bad idea. So they can, you know, uncover the pros and cons or uncover those pointers that makes that idea a very bad idea. And eventually, the idea that looks very good on paper, when we see the practicality and somebody stands up and points out that the gaps in that idea, you know, it becomes really expensive decision. But only if we allow somebody to express themselves. So it's very much important that we let people express themselves, and also it's very much important that the way we communicate, it's very much important. Why? Because quality of the conversation is as important as the result. So if I am sharing my opinion or I am trying to convey my thoughts or my concern to somebody, it has to be something that very realistic and should not be considered as personal. So the choice of words has to be very, very carefully crafted, and make sure that the message should not be lost in between.
So I find this conversation fascinating, Fahad, and it leads me to a question. You know, sometimes, let's say we are in the middle management layer. We're not the CEO or the CIO, but we're in this layer that's down here. And people might ask, well, how can I do anything, right? Because I'm in this big organization and I'm this small piece and I've got my little team here. So what recommendations do you give someone who is kind of in the middle of it to say, how can I help my own team perform well? How can I incorporate these principles that you are espousing within my own team, while at the same time making sure that I operate effectively in the larger structure, you know, because we're not all CEOs, we're not all in the C-suite, so we can't bring change from the top. But is there something that you can do as a director level or a manager level that will allow you to still craft this psychological safety within your own team, even though you operate under this bigger organizational umbrella?
Thank you, Napier. It's a very, very good question. And again, it's a very deep question. So I'm going to answer it in two parts. Now, the first part is, since whether we have a small team or we are in the middle management, we are actually the part of the puzzle. So it doesn't matter where we are placed, at the bottom, at the middle, or at the top. Yes, placement matters, but again, how you create connection and relation with people on you know, above you also matters. So whatever, if you're trying to be the catalyst of a change catalyst, or if you're trying to you know, share some perspective which is not as appreciative or acceptable in the organization, you need to find a sponsor, somebody who believes in you, somebody who thinks that the fresh perspective, initially he or she doesn't think that, you know, it is the real perspective, but they can listen to you and say, okay, it may have some value, it can provide some value and can help us out in a certain manner to get out of a situation or implement the project in a better manner. So at this level, at this point, I would like to share my personal story. In my previous organization, I was working as the head of Global Program Management Office, and we were implementing, electronic medical record in Africa. So project was already delayed. I was hired 2 years down the road. There was pandemic, there's a couple of other things. Then my boss got replaced, and there was a lot of other factors. You know, the team got constantly changes. Team, there's a, you know, iteration problem, you know, resource leaving and coming and new resources coming in. So, you know, the vendor has set a deadline which was not realistic at all. And the organization top management was, you know, just promoting their deadline just to make sure that, you know, they're not held accountable or responsible. So I was reporting to the head of information technology department, and also I was reporting direct, to the president of that organization, president office, the highest authority. So he was a very, you know, I would say a very logical person. So I tried my best to convey my message to the, since I was in the middle management, to ensure that my message goes to the to top management, but they were not ready to listen. They were all thinking, you know, this will be done by December, this will be done by December of this, for example, let's suppose this year, 2024, and which was not the case. So what I did was I booked a time with my top boss, and, you know, I just went to see him and say that, you know, I am the person who manages all of these things, but I have really, you know, concerns on the delivery dates, and I know that project will not be delivered by 31st December 2024, and we have to pay $45 million just to make sure that we don't get any penalty. He smiled and he said, you know, I know, we all know, but you're the first person who's admitting in front of me. I want you to go back, you know, draft a report for me and come back after 1 week, and, you know, we will present this report. I did that report in 7 days, which was more than a month's job. And he unannounced called everybody and asked me to present the report. I was in a very awkward situation because my boss was also there. And, you know, once I presented the report, everybody was after me. So what he said, he said everybody to everybody that, you know, hold on, do not go after him. This is a practice session, and you will face exact consequences on 31st December 2024. I want to give you 6 months lead, prepare yourself, and also get a demo of what will going to happen 6 months after. So please do not, fake decisions or do not promote anything that is not realistic. Now let's work together. It's a perspective. Let's prove him wrong if he is wrong. Now, at that point in time, although initially I was very scared, but, you know, I worked 6 months with the top management. All my recommendations were noted. I worked with three CEOs of different geographies. And, you know, the project went live after 3 months after I left that organization. I still have that respect in the organization for having that courage to speak myself in front of the top leadership of that organization. So sometimes around you have to be courageous and tactical as well. You cannot just blindly jump into the ditch and say, you know, this is my opinion. You need to find some sponsor who believes in you, have some facts, and then narrate a story that has the essence of it.
I love that story. And so it's so important that you give these examples, because here we are talking about psychological safety and just listing things that maybe everybody knows. But when you put it in the terms that you just did, it brings it to life what it means to disagree. So, for example, if I can just reiterate, you had a project that had a deadline. Let's say it's December 31st of 2024. And because of all your experience, you knew that that was an unrealistic expectation. But your boss was pushing that deadline. We're going to hit December. There's no way that we can get around that. In this case, you found a sponsor in the president of the company to say, hey, I believe this is a mistake for us to set this deadline. We're going to set ourselves up for failure, and we're going to get millions of dollars in penalties. Did I hear you correctly?
Yes, exactly.
And this president almost threw you under the bus by having you share with the entire team, including your boss, why this was a bad idea. But didn't leave you out to dry, because they supported you and said, listen, you're going to do the best you can to get it done within the time. But if anybody attacks him for speaking up or standing up, they'll have to answer to me. So they made it safe typically in a culture where your boss would have shut you down and you would have missed the deadline and had terrible penalties. But instead, you're able to have a dialogue where it was safe to disagree. And as a result, the trust that you had with your team grew, the ability to create realistic deadlines. We're not talking about Fahad, I know you. You're not someone, you said you did this report that was probably a month job in a week, right? So you're not somebody that's trying to take time off and be lazy. We get to be realistic. Why? Because if we set goals that are not, we want to stretch ourselves, but if we set goals that are clearly unattainable, people will give up because there's no way they can achieve it. It's like, well, why try? Because I'm not going to get rewarded. I'm not going to get bonused. I'm not going to get any of this. And if I speak up, I'm going to get punished. So why even stay on this team?
Yes, and they exactly. Leave the and team. One more thing, I'm sorry. There's one more thing that I've observed with this experience. You know, the senior management or anybody who creates a psychological safety and psychological safe environment, yeah, also need to see you follow through on your opinion, expression, or concern or advice. See, he when I said that it is unrealistic, he said, go back and give me a report in 1 week, which he knew wasn't possible. So it required a superhuman effort to get it done. But he wanted to see that if I deliver, I follow through, this means there is some serious problem. So I did that.
So he was challenging you a little bit to see if you really believed what you were saying and not just trying to be a weasel out of the commitment is what I'm hearing. Is that right?
Exactly.
Which was smart on his part, but at the same time made it hard for you to show that, yes, this is real. And I believe this. I love that. But when that doesn't happen, if you didn't have that experience, how valued would you feel? I mean, how much effort would you want to put into that project when no one listens to what you have to say?
See, now at that part, what I have learned from you in my experience from LIMSI and over the years, whenever I have a problem, I always reach out to you randomly and ask for advice. So this is what people need to do. Their coaches are available in form of teammates, team members, seniors, former team members, former bosses. Go to them and ask them, you know, how can I can share this with my seniors or top management, and how can I put it in writing, for example, how can I put it on the table, most important. So it becomes the agenda point in the next, for example, next committee meeting or next board meeting. So people can at least take a look at it as a red flag going forward. Now, what most important is that if we are unable to find that or find those coaches or mentors within the organization, within our circles, we have to look outwards. It requires real effort. See, what I've learned is, you know, it's a human tendency either to fight or flight. 80% of people take the flight. Only 20% fights and do whatever it takes to, you know, prove their claims or prove their concerns, situations in one form or the other. So, you know, as an individual, as a professional, it is very much important that reach out to people who have similar experiences and who have been in positions like you, who have been like, for example, doing implementation of large projects, who have dealt with multicultural organizations, multicultural team members, who can give you that insight how to talk to somebody and when to raise a question, when to raise something which is very much important. Now, if all of these things can come together, like, for example, if I don't have that experience, you know, I will take some guidance from either you or Napier and then use that strategy to convince my management.
Christian, I got a couple thoughts here. Sorry.
All right, go for it.
So I'm really interested in where you got this data where 80% of the people are under pressure flight and 20% will fight. I think it's got to be different by industry, because maybe in the IT world, but I also work with attorneys that are litigators, and I think 80% of them are fight and maybe 20% of them are flight. But I'm interested where you got that data. But what you're saying now ties into what you said in the beginning, that the quality of the conversation is just as important as what you're talking about. And you're giving a perfect example of, I think, an answer to Christian's question. What do you do when you're in that middle role? Is one, you set the example. How do I talk to my leader, to my president, to my direct manager in a way that she or he can hear me? And sometimes how we communicate doesn't effectively create that message. Or if we're emotional about something, then people will focus on that emotion and not the message. So going into a difficult conversation, which can cause us to have fight or flight feelings, right? I heard you say you work with sometimes an outside coach that can help you role play, that can help you think about that conversation and prepare you to have a more productive conversation, which means you have to be willing to do extra work. And some of
Absolutely.
You are saying, yeah, and like I'm coaching right now a project manager in Europe who works for a major telecom company, and she's going through these same issues of getting buy-in from senior management. And it's knowing that leader and speaking to them in a way that they can hear and understand and making them look good. And sometimes you have to take a risk and have a difficult conversation that's very uncomfortable, but that needs to be very calculated. You need to be ready for the consequences of that. That takes a lot of preparation and a lot of thought. Christian, that's just what...
Well... Fahad, you can respond to that if you want. I've got a question specific to project managers, but I'll wait until you talk to Spencer's points there.
Okay, thank you. Yes, actually, see, it is my experience, because I have been working in an organization where, you know, the cultural aspect has always been on the different side, you know, on a more fragile side of the psychological safety, I would say, because people are more keen to remain quiet as compared to be vocal about it. So I'm always a different person. I'm very expressive. I always take stand for certain things, take stand for my team. If I think it is some organizational rule is not appropriate, I always convey to HR. So I'm always the bad guy. You know, they think that I have some problem with everything. But, you know, my team has never complained. They're very happy. They're very innovative. Their efficiency is always at the top. And their delivery is always, first to complete their projects. So the most important thing that, you know, what I have understood and what I believe is that, you know, getting outside help is also very important. Being as a person, I am a very, go-getter. And also, I really want to be the best. So I take every positive measure to solve the situation. I don't give up that easily. So getting advice from somebody like you, Napier, somebody who's in the industry, who's a guru, I always reach out to those people, write emails, even, you know, get in touch with people on LinkedIn, narrate a little bit of what's going through and then get their opinion. So, you know, give me an insight how to solve that problem. And most importantly, see, when you have to break that ceiling, there's always a ceiling, there's always a group. I have to break that group to get into the upper echelon. So I have to prove myself that I have what it takes to be that top tier. So you have to be courageous. As leaders, you have to, you cannot shy and you cannot be an ostrich, you know, by putting your head in the sand and saying everything is fine. You cannot do that. So this is how I am. As a person, I am.
No ostriches.
Okay, so my question, Fahad, goes to the project management side, because you know, project managers face challenges, and one of those is that often they don't have authority because they're managing a project, but the people that are on the team don't necessarily report directly to the project manager. They're not their employees. They're employees of other parts of the organization, right? So that can present additional challenges for a project manager who is trying to build this culture of psychological safety in a project team. At the same time, it could potentially provide an opportunity. And the opportunity is, well, since I don't report to this person directly, I'm not this person's employee, he's just the project manager, then maybe I have more freedom to say what I want to say. So I'm curious to hear from your perspective as a project manager about the challenges and opportunities to create a culture of psychological safety in a project team when the members of the team don't necessarily report directly to you.
Thank you so much. It's a great, great question. So I'm going to put some preamble to it. So before getting into the project management side, let me explain or share my story of my current organization. When I joined this organization, I'm the youngest department head, and people are way above, older than me. There are some people who are 50, 55, and they have a rich history working 25 years, 28 years. But when I joined, you know, they were eyebrows raised, and, you know, it's when you guys join, he's so young, we will learn from him and how he will lead. So I called everybody in my room on the second day. First day was all administrative stuff, you know, signing forms and, you know, HR stuff. So I called everybody, you know, 9:30 in my room. And I said that, I need only two things from you. One, you give your 100% and never think about the outcome. If you succeed, that's your success. And if you fail, it will be me who will facing the management. And number two, never lie to me. I will always respect you for your effort, but never lie to me. I will give you my 200%, back you up. Everything that I can do for you, whether it's a raise, it's a job role, or anything that you can come in, talk to me, but give your 100% and don't lie to me. So what it did, next 6 months, I made sure that all my actions were consistent, what I did, or what I said to that second day with my team. And now, you know, they're so respectful. You know, my whole department is on an autopilot right now. I don't have to get into any person's, face, or would say, you know, whether this task is done or whether this project. They're so responsible because the accountability has been attached with the responsibility, and I have given them autonomy. Now, coming back to your question, now it's the project manager's job. If you feel, because we feel right away that the responsibility has been given to us is without any authority. So you need to negotiate with the management that if you need these outcomes, I need these things. If I cannot dictate certain things because, or I cannot force people because, you know, this way it cannot be done. Now, if this is very challenging at first, this is not something that management can swallow this pill very easily, but you have to negotiate with your management. So you have to communicate with them. Now, that in order to achieve some results, or in order to get that efficiency, drive that efficiency on a project team, what set of tools or authority levels you require, whether it requires promotion, whether it requires taking them to lunches or dinners or any outing, whatever. And most importantly, The last part of your question, you know, people are obviously, open and talk with candor with project manager because he or she is not the project manager. So they'll be very comfortable because they're not judged or analyzed or they're not being evaluated. So for certain things which have been said in their appraisals. But sometimes around, it's also vice. It turns into an opposite situation. Because if the project manager, they become too comfortable with project manager, he or she is a very nice person. From nice, I mean a reasonable person, a just person. So, and his or her boss is totally opposite. So they're more inclined toward, that project manager, look forward to work with them and, start ignoring their bosses, and which is very devastating. So as a project manager, you need to negotiate with your management, inculcate the skills in the project team that is for life, whether they work for you or their previous boss, because they work for the organization. The outcome is for the organization, for not for an individual. Last but not the least, you need to make sure that you get that authority and also as a personality wise, it should not fire back to you so that the team due to your charismatic personality or due to your good nature, team is more inclined towards you, not towards the old manager.
You got a follow up there, Christian. I can see it.
No, I was just nodding in agreement. I think it's so important and oftentimes does not happen. Hey, I'm in this position as project manager. I've been assigned by whoever it is to do this. In order for me to be successful, this is what I need from you, management, to help me deliver.
Which also takes courage, right?
Yes.
And I love what he said, Christian, saying that, we don't want to create an environment where there's a disparity between when they work for me or their original boss, so that there's a preference, negotiating and working with that other boss to create a relationship that we're working for the team of the company, not my team. And I think that's a great mindset, is that although it can be challenging, Fahad, because people do work for people. You have an impact, and people want to work where they're appreciated. So you can create some tension if you're not aligned as a management team throughout the organization. So that's going to take extra communication on your part to avoid those misalignment type of experiences for people working on a team and then coming to your project team. Am I making myself clear, Christian? I'm not sure I am.
Yeah, exactly. Let me share one story, if you allow me, because there are tons of stories that I have. Exactly in my previous organization when I was working, I had a team of five. And, I tried my level best to create a secure environment for them. Three of them were females and two were guys. So that they can gel and they can work. There was the emphasis on project outcomes and teamwork. That's it. So we have a 5A methodology that we have to assess to each other. We have some A's, they know that their appraisal is not just their own skills, how they help other people in developing their skills and in a better human being also be counted for. So what happened is, other members from other teams started to come towards me and say, please, can you take us in your team? Exactly, totally technical person who doesn't know project management. I want to work for you. And, can you please ask my boss to transfer me in your team? And initially I was taken aback. I was surprised, this is a real problem for me. Because we do certain events, we have team breakfast and, team meeting standards, fun environment. So what happened is slowly and gradually what I feel that I politely declined their request and sent back to their original department. Slowly and gradually, having people, teams around me started to change. They adopted those practices that were, performed by our team. And initially, we have a cultural impact of those practices. For example, every alternate week, there's a, bigger team breakfast. People start to share ideas. And, you know, there is cross-functional team meetings, which has post-its all over the, you know, and critical projects are being aligned. And then there is, you know, outings where, you know, initially teams who were working in silos, now they started inviting other team members as well. So it, we started slowly and gradually started to build a community. So it's a long-term effort, but it will take impact.
Well, and I love that, because that's, I think that's another great answer to your question, Christian, is that in that middle, you're creating that culture on your team, and hopefully that the leadership sees that and it starts to spread and they start to take that on. However, I would like you to, I'm going to give you a hypothetical, okay? Let's say with those five direct reports that you had, that you're trying to do your best to create this positive team environment, but one of the people on those teams feels like they deserve your job. They feel like they could be the better team leader than you could be. And it just so happens that they have some allies that are in the executive level. And so they go around you to say, oh, you know, Fahad, he's just soft and he's just trying to create an environment and make himself look good. Because that can happen where you have somebody that actually actively tries to undermine you. How would you manage a situation like that? How would you address that individual on your team that is trying to make themselves look like they deserve to be the leader at your expense?
Thank you so much. It's a very good question. And luckily, I have encountered that situation in my previous job as well. So I dealt it with by two crew methods. Number one, I always set team goals, technical team goals, or, you know, learning goals that are exactly relevant for promotion. So if somebody who's below me and they have to get if they get promotion, they will take my job. So they have to become at par at certain things, which the qualification I have. So I have built a step by step path towards my own job so that I can create my own successor. And I told them, in order to get my job, you have to get these verticals done. This done, and in this time. And if you want to get this in half the time, you need to double your effort. Now, on the other side, what I would say, what I had done is, when I was, switching my job and, you know, relinquishing my role, I went to the head of the department and said that please do not hire my replacement. My number two is ready. Give her 3 to 6 months as an acting, job. So that you can weigh her, that how she is, how her attitude is, and most importantly, how she responds or reacts to the pressure situation. Once you are exactly sure that she has, now you have a replacement of me, promote her. Otherwise, you have all the time in the world to, you can hire my replacement. And if you even don't hire my replacement, this team will self-operate on autopilot, and you will not have a problem. Because I took 15 days off, 10 days off without any, oversight, and my team does all the work. So my boss knew that they can work on their own. So in this way, I was very transparent with the boss. I came back, talked to my number two about it, that, if the day I resign, you will be getting my job. But for that, you need to get these things done. I've already spoken to the boss and to the HRS. So you need to create that trust at your upper level and also at the lower level. You have to be that bridge so that and transparent as well, so that they can understand and they exactly knew the next milestone is and what effort is required to get to the next milestone.
I love that example, Fahad, because it takes a situation that could be very adversarial, us versus them, me versus her, and instead you're saying, hey, I want you to take my job. Here's what you've got to do to take it, and then you've got also your own career paths and so on and so forth, and so you actually turn the tables and actually make this person an ally because she or he believes, hey, my manager, Fahad, is actually looking out for me. He wants what's best for me. And I think that's fantastic. I know we're kind of running up against it on time, but before you have your final question, Spencer, my question is, if I am a manager, if I'm a leader, and I have a team and it doesn't feel psychologically safe, what is the first thing that I should do to begin to turn the tide and bring psychological safety in my team? What's the very first thing that I should look to do?
Before I answer this question, there is a point I wanted to discuss because I thought that it is a very important point. When it comes to generations like Generation Y or other generations, if you are having millennials or Generation Z, psychological safety is something they will never compromise on. So if an organization doesn't promote their psychological safety or doesn't have that element of that bandwidth of that psychological safety, you will always have a difficulty or challenge in retaining members or team members. Now, as an individual, if I feel that my environment lacks psychological safety and I'm not, so the first thing that I need to do is, politely talk to HR. Again, somebody will criticize me that, you cannot just go to HR and, complain about your boss or something like that. But in general, you can always that because, there's an annual exercise where HR sends out emails to, nominate trainings and workshops and on cultural improvement. So you can nominate that and you can say that, this is the thing that we really need to know or you really want to get going because, people or companies spend so much on, strategic developments and strategy workshops, offsite strategy workshops. All those strategies fail because we don't have openness in the organization. We come up with a very phony, fabricated strategy where everybody knew it would fail, but we will say yes, 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 yes. It's fantastic because we know if we speak our heart out, our boss will give us a stare and would say, "Shut up, please." So, this is kind of a thing that organization needs to understand that they're spending millions on stuff and by overlooking a very basic ingredient, which is again impacting the overall organizational growth. Now, top companies like Google, top companies like Pixar, they have a motto like candor with care. Now, if you want to share feedback, sharing concerns is very natural. So if we have high performance team members on a high performance team, they will question each other because those debates, those disagreements, or because those questions requires clarity. And the more the clarity, the more the effectiveness of the strategy. The book I was referring to, Radical Candor by Kim Scott, if you read that, it has element of Google culture. They question each other like anything, but with respect. With genuine empathy, because they want to do good for the organization. So HR is your first pit stop. Go to your HR, talk to them, and again, use them or engage them for the betterment of the organization, not just in a complaining mode. How we can together, this is something that I think can impact organizational growth. How can we do it together? Tell me what I can do in my unit or subunit or my department. These are the things that you can do. And once it starts small and then start to roll out on a bigger level, maybe 6 months target, a year target, and then see results and improvise accordingly.
Fahad, a while ago you were talking about having conversations where you're it's fine for you to take my job someday. Here's how you do it. Cause that's really the only way that you can grow. Yet that type of conversation takes courage. You talked about having courage already. It takes self-confidence. And my last question is, what do you think are some barriers that we need to overcome to be able to have that confidence? So for example, you talked about 80% of people in your experience have that flight attitude. They want to run away from the problem. They don't want to face it. So they may have imposter syndrome. They're in a on a project team, they're leading a team, and they feel like, I don't have the confidence to have that type of conversation. If I do, I'm afraid I'm going to get written up or fired. Or, you know, what are some of the barriers that you've seen to having the conversations that you're talking about, and how do you overcome that?
Thank you. It's a great question. You know, the biggest misconception that people have, or even I had in my initial years, is, you know, the day or the moment I have my successor number two prepared, you know, they will, you know, either fire me or I will be, you know, shown the door. But it's the exactly opposite. You are not promoted unless you have a, you know, successor plan. So, you know, if you don't have any leaders in the pipeline, you will always be engaged in doing operational work, not producing strategic value, and not showcasing your real talents. The moment you have your number two prepared, you will he or she will focus on all the, you know, manual tasks. I would say manual, which are not automated, not in IT terms, but again, which are very manual in nature. And you can focus on providing, you know, value services, value-based services organization, on projects that even not even born. For example, like Gmail or AdSense. You know, why I give Google example, because 20% of the Google employees' time can be spent in a side project. Gmail is a byproduct of it. AdSense is a byproduct of it. So only when I would be able to do something extra if I am unable, I'm able to, you know, focus on strategic initiatives, not on operational work, not putting out fires, because, you know, I'm very much focused. My vision is very narrow, and I'm just looking at if somebody will take my job. You know, we need to get out of that fear. I was taught by my former PMI president in my second year that, you know, you will get growth when you have somebody ready to take your place. So the company will value your services and they will send you to another, not necessarily elevate you, give you different experiences, give you different departments, and that will add value to you. So an elevation doesn't only mean that, you know, if I'm the, you know, for example, head of IT, I become the CIO, maybe I can become the head of retail or head of digital digitization. I will maybe on the remain on the same level, but again on a different vertical, where I get business knowledge, where I get business growth, where I can actually test the water. It's now out of the technical domain, so I'm getting 360 degree, you know, growth. So it's a change of perspective basically that people need to look into, and that I have to shed that fear that if they can get somebody mentored or ready, get ready for their to be their number two, so they will be shown the door.
Well, Fahad, it's been a super informative and inspiring hour for me. You've given me a lot of ideas on how I can work even better to build psychological safety in my organization. If people are interested in learning more about psychological safety or the work that you're doing or want to connect with you, what's the best way for them to do so?
Yes, people can reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm very much active on LinkedIn. I'm with the name Fahad Ahmed, PMP, and you can directly connect with me. One thing with your question, I would like to take a liberty. You know, last tip. Ask your people to participate in group meetings, group discussions, so that it can become really fruitful for the organization, not just a meeting. The day we start to do that, or a small bit of participation from the team members, it will make a huge difference. That is the beginning of the psychological safety environment in any organization.
Oh, that's fantastic. Thank you for giving us that little additional thought there at the end. And Spencer, you've been helping teams all around the world. You've been helping organizations build high-performing teams. If people want to connect with you, how can they do that?
Reach out to me on LinkedIn. I get people do that every day, and I appreciate that. Before I flip it back to you, Christian, I've just been taking notes. can I just list what I some of the things that I heard Fahad say?
Yeah.
The quality of conversation, not just expressing your opinion, is really important in creating psychological safety up and down. Set expectations with your team, what success looks like, and that let them know that you're going to support them in the success and highlight their efforts, and know that you're going to take the blame with leaders. Be courageous. Don't be an ostrich. Practice having difficult conversations, perhaps with an outside coach. Invite the team to express themselves, and that's what you just talked about, inviting people to have group discussions. And it may start slow, but eventually it will catch on and have steam, and people will become more and more involved. Be authentic. Be vulnerable. Develop your team. Spend time. Go to HR and talk about what you can do to upskill your team, and spend time training them. Work on your own empathy. Figure out how you can work better together with different departments. Have those conversations one-on-one with different department heads. Be willing to get feedback, 360-degree feedback, so you know how you're doing. Those are a lot of lessons, I think, that as a leader, if you implement those, you will create that psychological safety. And the last thing that I'll say is, we didn't spend a lot of time talking about what the outcomes are, but Fahad did mention that his teams are finishing their projects on time, on budget, sometimes ahead of time, because of the culture that you created. Is that correct, Fahad?
Absolutely.
And that's ultimately how the team thrives, by creating that culture of psychological safety. So I just wanted to wrap that up in my what I heard. And Christian, everybody that comes on just loves and adores you just because of the depth of your perspective and thought. And so how do people reach you if they want to know more about you and your services?
Just connect with me on LinkedIn, like everybody else here. I'm happy to make connections with people and have conversations. Well, this has been a fantastic hour, Fahad and Spencer. I really appreciate it. And also to listeners and viewers who chimed in today, we're grateful to you for participating as well. Please like and subscribe to our podcast, and we'll catch you again soon. Thank you so much.